Hey guys, welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode 94. We have no guest this week, but Phil and I are both doing double duty talking about the Orville and the much advertised Star Trek Discovery. I want to remind you that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast, you'll easily find us. Hit that subscribe button so you never have to miss an episode, and while you're there, leave a review or at the very least a rating. We'd really appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. That's at 3 Drinks In Pod. 3 Drinks In Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And questions, concerns, comments, and complaints can be sent to 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. Okay, that's everything. Here we go.
Just because a group of people belong to the Federation, it does not mean that they are saints.
Excuse me.
Do you know what the trouble is?
No.
The trouble is Earth.
Really?
On Earth, there is no poverty, no crime, no war. You look out the window of Starfleet headquarters and you see paradise. Well, it's easy to be a saint in paradise, but the Maquis do not live in paradise. Out there, in the demilitarized zone, all the problems haven't been solved yet. Out there, there are no saints, just people. Angry, scared, determined people who are going to do whatever it takes to survive, whether it meets with the Federation approval or not.
I walked back across the room going, oh, I forgot the bottle opener. And I go, oh, no, it's a twist off. Because it's a twisted tea, you see.
Ah, very cute. You're out of cider?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that, ooh, that face. Oh, my.
That's not that good.
No, it's very sweet.
No, it's not even that. Like, it's just like this tea flavor, so you get that bitterness from the tea. Just like the, like a hint of it. And then, like, the alcohol hits you in the back of the throat. You're like, oh, oh God.
I wonder if it would be better as a half and half. You know, like a hard lemonade and a hard tea.
I think everything's better as a half. I think that's delicious. Mm. It's one of my favorite things. That's just, oh, that's awful.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What are you drinking? I have a twisted tea that I can't stand.
Tis the season. I am drinking Spaten Oktoberfest.
I should go get some of that.
It's good.
They run out of it at my local store all the time. I get there, and it's like this giant hole in the display case.
Yeah.
It's like Spaten regular, which is green, and I don't know anyone who drinks that. And then there's like the hole where the blue one should be.
Yeah, because it's delicious.
Yeah, easily. Mm. So, all right.
And it's not pumpkin flavored, which is nice.
Yeah, no more pumpkin. Mm. Somebody told me that they had a bacon, egg, and cheese with pumpkin spice butter. And I looked at them and go, that's not right.
Wait, what?
You can't do that. I mean, French toast, maybe.
That's not how this works.
I unfriend you.
Yeah. It's on my wall. Yeah, no, that sounds pretty gross.
Anyway, so you asked for more Star Trek podcasts.
They're never ending. You're just never going to stop getting them.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
I'm not sorry.
So we're going to talk about the Orville, and we're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery. I had very low expectations for the Orville.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't know why exactly that is, but... Because, I mean, all I know of Seth MacFarlane is he made 3 brilliant seasons of Family Guy, and then a bunch of crap after that because...
Like 30 terrible seasons of Family Guy.
Yeah, and that American Dad, which has its like one or two good jokes the entire run. But like, he got onto a thing where it's like, oh, you're a genius, right? Good, we'll just let you do whatever you want because you make us money. And it worked because people watched that stuff and made it money. But... you know, he's made one movie, maybe two. Like, Ted was supposed to be pretty good, right? That was him.
So he made Ted. He made Ted 2. He made A Million Ways to Die.
You have to make Ted 2.
Of course. A Million Ways to Die in the West he made, which was okay. I think he made a few others. I don't remember. The Ted was really the only funny one. Ted was a funny movie.
Yeah. Just because the content is so absurd, but like everyone kind of goes along with it.
Right.
And it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But like this, like I kind of, I feel like I jumped the gun by saying, I was not going to like the Orville, but I really had no other basis for comparison because he never worked in this genre before.
I don't think so. He actually was on Star Trek.
He was. Yes. He was Ensign What's-His-Nuts.
Yeah, he was a huge, huge fan of Star Trek, and he talked his way onto like a couple walk-on roles, just walked on. I think he had like two lines in four episodes or something.
Yeah, he was at the end of season three when the ship was all falling apart, and he was working on something, and he gets yelled at by Commander Tucker a couple times. Like that's it. But like it kind of wait, was that like that sounded like
I was like, you know, I know that guy.
Yeah.
So he's an admittedly huge Star Trek fan.
We've said it before. We said it specifically after we came back from the convention. They look like everybody. Mm. You know. You never know who's gonna be an enormous Star Trek fan. Yeah. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not so obvious.
Yeah, sometimes it's definitely not obvious. Yeah. Hi, you're beautiful. What are you doing here?
I still won't ever forget just walking through the convention floor and all the attractive women who were like, you know, some of them were teenagers, but some of them were a bit older. I'm like, where the heck were you people?
Yeah.
20 years ago when I was in high school, I thought this stuff was the best thing in the world. Like, really? I mean, honest to... You know, it's like finding the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah. Well, it was just nice to see any fans. I don't know. I don't have any friends that are fans of Star Trek, so.
No, it's kind of an isolating interest usually.
Yeah, apparently. But Seth MacFarlane is a huge fan of that show, and so he offered to do Star Trek. But, you know, they were doing something else with it, and they were like, you're not really the guy for that. So he's like, well, I'll just make my own space show. And it's everything in but name that is Star Trek.
Yeah.
It is Star Trek. Like, the first two episodes, I'm like, I am watching 90s television right now.
Yeah.
Like, this is an episode of Star Trek.
It just is. And, I mean, there are things that make Star Trek... We talked about this last time, too. We were talking about, you know, in the last mailbag, what makes it a Star Trek TV show and the style of doing that and how you can't manipulate that style and have it really be the same thing. You can try, but you cannot do it. It doesn't work. And it doesn't mean that you might make a bad thing because you don't make Star Trek again, but it just means that, like, when the actors realized that they were, like, the guys who were in The Next Generation and everything, when they realized that, okay, this is going to run for a while, and I'm never going to get to work doing anything else on screen ever again, it was a double-edged sword. They said to themselves, this is great, because it's a steady paycheck for, you know, however many years, but also, it's going to be hard to break out of type after this. So the smart ones went into directing. And said, you know, that I can make money behind the camera when this is over, and I can feed myself after the fact. But there was a very specific school that they went to, said, this is how you shoot Star Trek. You don't shoot it any other way. You can sit and go through the whole process. We'll teach you what to do, and then you can do the episodes. But you can't actually deviate from that. And sometimes it was a clever thing here and there where they told a story differently. There was one episode of Next Generation told entirely from the point of view of an alien race meeting humans for the first time. One time that happened. And then again, it happened in Voyager. But, like, those things were few and far between. These things just didn't happen. And also, like, the way it's shot and the way things are structured thematically and story-wise, like, they took spec scripts from anyone, which was great, but the whole thing was, you write us a show, we might do it, but it's got to be our show that you were writing. And that's essentially what he did. I mean, he's got basically a license now to print money if Fox lets him. Because just to have to recycle old Star Trek stories and make, you know, throw a dick joke in there, you know, and you've got a hit. Because mm-hmm. it's basically, you know, it's more action than it is comedy. It's great. It's actually not a bad show.
It was definitely sold as a comedy. And that's why I was really worried that it would... It's an okay show. It's not amazing. It's only 2-3 episodes in. But it's also not terrible. And I'm like, why is it so... It's not that funny. And I was like, that's actually a good thing. Because I don't know if you've watched Family Guy lately, but it's not funny. And they let them do all kinds of gross, stupid, racist humor on that show. It's just... It can be done well because those early seasons were funny, but now it's not. And I was really worried it was going to be like it's tasteless, stupid Star Trek spinoff that like you would see like in a porno or something, you know,
which they have if you really want to look for it.
Oh, I'm sure they do. And I was just like, oh, God, I hope it's not like that. And it looked like it was going that way. Like he's interviewing everybody on the ship and he looks at the robot and he goes, "Aren't you guys legendarily racist?" And I was like, "Oh God, they're going to put a racist robot on the bridge." Like my heart sank. And then they didn't. It was just, I believe that all life is inferior to robots. And he doesn't mention it the rest of the episode. I'm like, oh, that could have been really bad. We really dodged a bullet there. I thought that they were going to be making Jew jokes on the bridge or something. Like, oh God.
I mean, the thing about it is that it, what I like about it when it's funny is that it's funny in the way that you and I are funny when we talk about Star Trek, which, you know, we hold in high esteem. But there are times when you look back at some of the episodes, you go, what the fuck happened there? Like, what were they, like, there was this old, you know, one of the episodes with one of the Romulans, Ambassador Tomalak, this really over the top Greek actor who really chewed the scenery.
That guy died, didn't he?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Let's say yes.
I don't know. Okay. Sorry if you're alive, whoever you are.
But there was this one episode where his face, and I'm like moving my camera in, so Phil gets all of my face right in the view screen. Mm. So normally, when you're watching somebody on the view screen in Star Trek, you get like, you know, chest high, and then, you know, you get their entire head in the frame. And, you know, their shoulders. And you know, it looks like they're, you know, like any old video chat you have right now, which back then was way in the future. Turns out it wasn't. There's one episode, he was like super zoomed in. Yeah. Like all you got were his cheekbones and his eyes. You're like, why are they? And they made that same joke in this episode where the one guy was like off center by a couple of feet. Yeah. And he goes, could you just move into the center? Yeah, that's much better. It was all I could see.
Yeah, it's a lot of white space there. And it was just driving me crazy.
So like that was funny. And the second episode when the girl has to take command and she goes and she takes a shot of tequila beforehand.
Yeah.
Like this is relatable humor to people who are fans of the show, and then you have fairly sophisticated special effects shots and action and clearly defined roles for the characters and Penny Johnson, everybody, from Deep Space Nine, who's doing a pretty good job, I think.
Well, it's nice that she's playing like the seasoned kind of person that's been there before, you know. She's like, are you screwing up? Well, then stop screwing up, and this is what I would say to you if you needed help with something. And you know, it's hard to do humor in a show like this, and it still rubs me wrong when it comes up sometimes. In that, like, why does Firefly work with humor, or like Battlestar Galactica usually? Because, well, not that had a lot of humor in it, but why do those things have humor? It's because they're not military people on a mission taking everything very, very seriously. Okay, on Firefly, they're space people, and they're just out there, you know, adventuring. Whereas on this one, or on the Enterprise, they're all they're always wearing their military outfits, and they've all got jobs to do, even on their off hours, you know. I have to check my culture samples and things like that. So on this show, it's the same damn thing. They're in some sort of galactic federation, but then they, like, make jokes, like, can I drink my soda up here? You know, like, can I wear shorts on the bridge? You know?
Yeah, like, those are kind of silly, but they're not distracting from the plot. And it doesn't, they don't sacrifice the, like, the integrity of the characters too. Like one of the things you mentioned last time was that like Firefly was funny and you could do humor with that because space was incidental. Mm-hmm. Like you could have, you know, set that anywhere, and for the most part, it looked like it was set in the Old West. And the fact that it was the old West in space, you know, gave the characters a sort of prescience about what was going on, that they could be funny about it, whereas you couldn't be funny if you were doing like a straight up, you know, Old West TV show. There was a lot more leeway there, and it worked a lot better. This, when they do goofy shit about soda and wearing shorts to work,
we're not getting out at 5 today, you know,
and the pizza party down on the planet kind of thing, like. Like, they work, but at the same time, the characters are also as serious as they were in Star Trek. The last episode, the last one I saw, the second episode, when the captain and his first officer get kidnapped, and the girl's like, well, I can't go get them. The admiral told me to leave them behind. Mm. And the two goof-offs who, like, pilot the ship are like, what, are you kidding me? You know, and they like, you know, he would have gone to get you. It got like really intense where they really were trying, they shunned her. And they said, you're not being brave enough here and you need to be braver than this. It definitely clashes with the let's go to, you know, go down for the pizza party, but it's okay because that's what you want them to do. Like this, the show thrives on the nostalgia we all come to it with.
Well, it's not overdone and they're not offensive jokes. So yep. It's very much like, okay, that's a dumb gag, but, you know, whatever. You're right. Like, they still are who they are.
Yeah.
You know, and they do still take things seriously, even though you don't expect them to. You know, so right. Like they hire the guy to be the pilot, even though he's kind of a screw-up. And I'm like, oh, what, is he always going to be drunk? He's going to be this. He's not really, though. Like you said, like... He's a brave, loyal kind of person, and he would do good things. So, I mean, it's only 2 episodes in, so, you know, these things always change as they go. The next few episodes could be terrible, but they're off to a good start.
Yeah, I'm going to keep watching. You know, it's just because the stories are there, and you're invested, and, you know, it's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's definitely better. And so, they don't do a ton of setup. You know, the guys wearing black are the bad guys, and it looks like it's going to be like a different thing of the week, kind of non-episodic. It's going to be episodic, non-serialized thing. Yeah. So, and I think he said in an interview, it was like, there's nothing like that on television. Everything's now serialized. Everything is an anthology series. He's like, I don't want to do that, right? Not with this. It works better if I can zoom off somewhere new and explore the galaxy. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. For a comedy, it has to be fresh every week.
Yeah.
I mean, a handful of situation comedies can have like a running gag, but that almost always steers them into something more serious. Friends did this, in some cases, too much. How I Met Your Mother did it, you know. But they came and left with it. So it would be a season focused on Ted getting married, and the next season was about Marshall... And Lily having a baby, Marshall's dad dying, and like it got serious when, you know, the storyline stretched out. But they didn't always hang on to the same characters. Mm-hmm. But this show, yeah, it wouldn't work if you had to come back to the same plot every week and try to find a way to wrench a joke in there.
Yeah, it's tough to do episodic or serialized stuff when you're traveling all the time. It depends how much you want to do, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the characters might change, and you know, we'll see. I'm interested to see. I'll keep watching it.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully the special effects hold up. They don't blow the budget in the first episode. Because it does look nice,
they were pretty good. Yeah, they did a nice job.
There's Victor Garber always in it for a paycheck.
Yeah. I couldn't think of his name. He has a very old, old-timey movie star kind of name. Victor Garber.
Victor Garber. He looks like an old, and he's looked like an old-timey movie star for like 20 years.
Oh, he looked he's old had the same on, gray hair.
He looked old on Frasier, and that was 20, 25 years ago now.
I forgot he was on Frasier.
Yeah, he was like the butler or something.
Yeah. Him and Max von Sydow, who's been playing an old guy since 1962.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow they're hanging in there, I guess.
Yeah. All right.
So yeah,
and go, on the other,
go watch that. Yeah, yeah. So.
Go watch watch the Orville. What's worth it? Meanwhile,
there's a new Star Trek ad.
There's a new Star Trek. Everybody, I don't know if you've heard.
You might not have because it's behind a paywall. So the Orville is free.
On Mars in a cave with your eyes shut and your fingers in your ears.
So what did you think of Star Trek Discovery, which didn't make an appearance?
Okay, so what I saw was a hot bag of garbage. And
okay.
I've said that, and then now we'll say this, because if you live tweeted the show.
I did.
I was a few minutes behind. And I want to say thank you to everybody who responded to the Twitter poll. We really appreciate that. If you missed it on Instagram, because I posted that today, the totals of so there was a simple question Philip put out there. What did you think of Star Trek Discovery? Choices were loved it, hated it, okay, hope it gets better, and it's fine, but I'm done. We have nearly a three-way tie between loved it, okay, hope it gets better, and it's fine. Loved it and hope it gets better got 30%. It's fine, but I'm done is 29, so that's pretty much right there. And hated it and 11%. Okay, so I want to thank everyone, first of all, for responding to the Twitter poll. And if you haven't followed us on Twitter, you should do that right now or later, but soon.
When will later be now? Soon.
But before we get into this, now that I've mentioned what my general thoughts were, I just want to point out to everybody that I read all the hashtags and I see everyone's got there's a lot of varied levels of interest and points of entry for this show. We're going to talk about this purely on the merits of the product being put out. We're not interested in, at least I'm not interested in talking about, you know, anything that's groundbreaking or earth-shattering or, you know, barrier-shattering. That stuff is fine, but and if that's your point of entry into the show, great. It's nice to have Star Trek fans. But our level of criticism is going to be based on the merits of what we saw. So that's my disclaimer about that, because it was a hot bag of garbage.
Okay.
What'd you think?
I thought it was boring. That first episode could not hold my attention. I zoned out a lot. I might have missed something because of it, too. I was a little confused. Like, maybe I missed something, but I really don't. I was so bored. I don't know.
I watched the second half while prepping a chicken for dinner. So,
yeah.
It didn't. The only parts I needed to really watch were the parts that were subtitled.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. And it was subtitled. Yeah. It was subtitled like a Dora the Explorer episode. It was so slow. You know? Where are the Klingons? Huge pause. That's right. They're over there. I was like, okay.
Yeah. See, that's 90% of my current TV watching is like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Do you see the triangle?
Yeah, and they just stare at you, and it's...
And it's only great if you have a 1.5-year-old that goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's adorable. But, you know, during Star Trek, I'm going, yeah.
Yeah. Then what happens? Oh, my God.
Tell me more.
Yeah. Why do they make them speak Klingon when they had marbles in their mouth? I don't understand why. They just talk so slowly.
Jesus Christ.
Because it's made up. It's like, it's the language no one really speaks. It's okay if you rush it a little. I won't get upset.
Well, I mean, I'm not entirely sure that's true. There might be guys sitting there literally with, you know, Klingon to English dictionaries.
That's true. But, yeah, so I didn't... I don't know what it is that we're supposed to be watching. I don't know what the show is. I still don't know.
No.
They were so vague about it in the previews. And then this episode was all about Michael, the girl. And, yeah. her being on this ship with this captain, and they've been together 7 years, and then they find this thing in the edge of space where the Klingons are hoping to bring warring factions together to fight the Federation. Okay. That took the entire episode to set that up. It took a long, long time.
It's as if they were trying to set up a sweeping, complex story to engage, or rather is to not to turn off as many people as possible. Not necessarily to engage as many people as possible, but not to alienate as many people as possible. And in doing so, made almost no decisions about story whatsoever that would have created any impetus to move it along faster.
Well, I don't know what it is I'm supposed to be rooting for. Who's the good guy in this scenario? Okay, like, yes, the humans and the Federation, obviously, but you have a captain that doesn't really know what she's dealing with. You have a first officer who's clearly wrong and mutinies at the end, so you're like, well, this woman's a pain in the ass. You have the science officer who's a complete and utter wuss. All three of them argue with each other the whole episode. And then you have the villains on the other side who are so slow and dull. So you're sitting here like, I hate all of these characters. What are we even doing here? And then at the end of the first episode, you're not sure what's going to happen. Like, they still haven't made any decisions yet. We've come to the edge of space and we've found Klingons. That's it. Are they going to fire on me? I don't know.
Yeah.
It looked nice, but I was like, I need a character I can cheer for and a problem I can solve.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got none of that.
No. And then what else did you think of the first episode?
I have some notes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. These are in order as they appeared to me on the screen. First of all, that's a boy's name.
Yeah.
Michael. It's my middle name. I know that. So perhaps this is a nod towards transgenderism?
No, it's the Brian Fuller, who was on the show before he left, he always names a female character as a man. That's like his trademark kind of thing. He always feels, oh, strong female characters. Well, what's the big deal? Give him a male's name. So he did it with his other shows, and they kept the name after he left the show as like an homage to him.
Is it supposed to be spelled like Michael, M-I-C-H, or it's not like M-I-K-A-L, no, like some kind of futuristic spelling?
No, it's just Michael. I found it confusing because every time I said Michael and she turned her head, I'm like, do they mean her? It's confusing. I mean,
there are a plethora of names, dozens of them, that function androgynously, you know, either as abbreviations or not, but like, this is the one you went with?
As far as I know, she's also the only one that has a name like that. So it's like, it really stands out in an odd way. You know, like, I know it's the future, but no one else has a name like that. And I'm not from the future, so I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
It's just very distracting.
Yeah. So that's stupid. In the beginning, when they're walking in the desert, and she's like, I've found the water, and I'm so amazing. You shouldn't doubt me.
Oh, that was really stupid.
And then, let's go for a walk, and, you know, you shouldn't doubt me either, you know. And, like, why couldn't you just open your mouth and tell her I'm walking in a particular pattern?
How is that supposed to help? It's so cloudy.
I mean, we'll ignore the physics of walking in a windy desert and trying to leave tracks in the sand, but we'll, you know, one thing at a time, everybody. So there was that. I recognize a lot of names in the credits. Nicholas Meyer, Joe Manosky, Alex Kurtzman. These are all famous Star Trek guys. Nicholas Meyer directed Star Treks 2, 4, and 6.
Oh, the good ones.
So the reoccurring theme with the Klingons began with him, with that whole the idea about the Klingons concerned about losing their identity within the heterogeneous Federation, and you know, there's the impetus for their territorial ambitions being that the more we control, the more Klingon we are. Mm-hmm. And she the line that got quoted a lot on Twitter was not to confuse race and culture. People really dug that line like it was a thing. I don't think I even understand that line. But as far as the Klingons go, that's an important fact. They're racists, the Klingons, because they're trying to preserve the purity of their race. So it's an old theme. People are going to treat it like it's a brand new idea, but it's literally been the single driving force for those characters since the 60s. So if you think you're doing something new here, people, you're really not. You're just not. Which is part of what bothers me about this is they're walking around thinking that they're breaking new ground, and they're not at all. And their ignorance of the franchise, which they're now using to make a lot of money, kind of annoys me, and it sort of insults all of our, you know, of our attention spans, at the very least, if not our intelligences.
I mean, yeah. I don't. Yeah. Some of those people worked on that stuff. They should know. They know that stuff.
I mean, part of it's just like the marketing. They want to talk about this, like, ooh, it's brand new. Ooh, it's this, and it's, you know, we're doing things no one's ever done before. That's why you should watch it. So, yeah, I'm not saying everyone is doing that. I'm just saying that, like, people who talk about it, like, this is all going to be groundbreaking, you know, between the women and the black people and the Asian people and the homosexuals and, like, and women named Michael.
Yeah. You know,
like, guys, none of it is new. It might be interesting to you, great, but it's not new, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know? What'd you think of the theme song and the graphics for the opening?
The theme song was fine, I guess. I don't know what are the graphics supposed to be? Like, they'll always look like space helmets and stuff.
They're like schematics almost, like things being looked at from, you know, like just drawings of it, and then you see it.
Yeah, it's more of that, like, hiding what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, if it was all the other Star Trek episodes were, the openings were thematically tied to what the show was about. Okay, so the other four shows you had, the ships flying around, or the space station just being busy. And then you had Enterprise, which had the idea of that we've progressed to this point. Our destiny is to go into space. Okay, I get that. I don't know what this, just like space helmets, people's eyeballs. I don't know what this is about. Okay.
Yeah, it's
like
big.
It's called a show about discovery, but it looks like they're not going to be doing a lot of that.
No.
I don't know. Well, maybe they will. I don't know.
It's hard to tell. The slanted camera thing. Just, you know.
Yeah.
That really pissed me off.
And then it would, like, very slowly turn back and go the other way, as if, like, the camera was floating in space, which is a cute idea, but it was making me nauseous.
Oh, my God, so... I couldn't look... Oh, and I'm like, yeah, I've got a weak stomach, but fine. I mean, that's one of the things that really kind of grinded my gears, is that there's a visual style you kind of have to pay some attention to. And if you're going to throw it out the window... That's going to bother some people, and it bothers me. Like,
well, that's just a style of the whole visual thing is new.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're doing this now, okay? It's 2017, and we're using good stuff now. We're not doing the fat man unitards and the buttons that look like from the 60s anymore.
I mean, there are things you could do, you know, visually to update it, and that would be welcome. You know, I don't need to see the same, you know, crappy fluorescent-looking lighting all the time. But
like the movies did.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was, people really were bothered by this. I didn't really mind it. When they made Generations back in their mid 90s, you know, they got movie budget lighting, and it was cool. You know, you got to see what Star Trek would have been like if they had had money to make it instead of, you know, doing it all in syndication and doing it on a shoestring. People were like, that doesn't look right. Like, yeah, but it looks cool. It doesn't look bizarre. You can see pretty much everything. There were some scenes that were kind of dark. But, like, when you're up next to a sun, like they were in the beginning of that movie, yeah, that's what it might look like out the window.
Yeah.
Great. But, for Christ's sakes, there needs to be something that grounds you a little bit into what's going on. And this first person flying through space business is really, it's cinematically complex and, you know, it's cinematic. Everything is the word, but it's you're making a TV show. That's what we're here to watch. Mm-hmm. Like when they go out and like, gee, what is that thing? Our sensors can't see it. They go to the room with the telescope. Yeah. All I could think of was the first episode or two of Next Generation when they send Geordi to the window to look out with his visor because he's got special vision with that. I'm like, really? This is how far we've come with this? Yeah, go to the window?
I mean, it was cute, but at the same time, it didn't do anything.
Oh, it slowed shit down.
They still didn't know what it was.
No. Yeah, it's true. It didn't actually help. Oh, it looks like a small thing far away. Yeah, but I bet you it's bigger if we get closer to it.
It's kind of blurry. Yeah.
So I hate the computer voice.
They just picked a woman.
Yeah, they didn't. Like that could be Siri, for Christ's sakes.
Well, I mean, yeah. The woman who used to do it is dead.
And I understand why they couldn't get her. But...
She was indisposed.
I mean, the thing about the computer voice from the show, there's two problems with that just occurred to me. The first one is that this takes place at the same time as Kirk, right?
It's before Kirk.
A little bit before, not much before.
Right.
Did the computer talk in the 60s?
I don't think so.
Nope.
They also didn't have holograms instead of view screens.
We're getting there. Slow down. yeah, so... The computer voice is stupid. What the fuck happened to shuttlecrafts?
Those were so 1960.
She gets into that suit and flies around like an asshole.
Yeah.
I get it. You can't fly in close because they're asteroids. You have to go in a very rickety spacesuit.
Yeah, I forgot. I mean, I didn't like that scene, but I forgot that they had shuttlecrafts.
Yeah, how about that?
I was like, yeah, she's just got to go out there. That makes sense.
All right. The guys on the bridge with the biometric headgear. One guy, his entire face was a computer.
Okay, yeah. That's I want to say something about that. If I might cut in, Jim. Why do people look like that? That's a holdover from the J.J. Abrams nonsense where we need to make people look strange, but we don't want to pay for a lot of prosthetics, so just slap something plastic to the side of that guy's head.
But I don't want to spend a lot of money. Yeah. So like, I mean, it's very Star Wars.
But you watch Star Trek with, like, Geordi. He's the only one who has something on his face.
Yeah.
And they explain why. You know, he doesn't have any eyes or whatever the explanation was. Not everyone should be walking around with things slapped onto them. It should just be regular people, right?
I mean, the Geordi's visor made him unique. And it also, they asked him, why don't you get rid of these things and get regular eyes? That's why I was actually really disappointed when they made, in the later movies, they got rid of the visor.
Yeah, but he still had the ocular implants.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. But, like, it's a visual thing that set him apart and made him unique. He also chose it. He said, I don't want them. This is what makes me me. Mm-hmm. And then he abandons that, which pissed me off. Like, if this is part of my identity, you know, that's a very powerful statement. And I remember LeVar Burton was talking in an interview about an early episode where there was going to be this whole weird thing about him and Data and about how, because of his visor and Data's nature, they would form a little club called the Perceivers because they perceived things in a very unique way. And it got dropped, I guess, for good reasons. It seems kind of cheesy and a little bit hokey. But that, you know, their friendship was one of the more interesting things about Next Generation. They had a real friendship, which you really didn't see until, like, DS9 came along with the Doctor and O'Brien. But, yeah, that was a part of their identity. Now you have just some yahoo sitting behind the console on the bridge wearing his own... Very cumbersome and looks potentially dangerous. Should we get into some kind of a space battle type of headset?
Well, yeah. No, I don't understand why they... Just let them be people, because I know it's the future. Like, I get it, you know?
Like, you don't even need... Like, it's nice we can do makeup now and make people look really alien, but there's... Again, there's reasons people look the way they do. And those reasons might have been... aesthetic, or they might have been practical choices to make given constraints, but they also solved the issue of why all the aliens look the same in an episode of Next Generation. It's not a great episode, but it helps to explain, I'm not going to go into what it was, but like you're going to abandon that whole thing and say, let's just make them look weird for the sake of weird.
Yeah. That's...
Who are you attracting with that? What's the impetus behind that decision?
I read a really good part of trivia about Men in Black when they said, we don't want to do Star Trek aliens because this is, the 90s. And Star Trek was not cool. I wouldn't say it's cool now, but they were saying, and we wanted, we still want to do puppets, and we want to do aliens that look different. They don't all have two eyes and four limbs, and so they started coming up with all these weirdo designs. But they had to reject a lot of them because the producers and the directors were like, okay, where am I supposed to look at this thing? Where's its head? Where is it talking from? And the guys were like, I don't know. It doesn't have a mouth. It's like, well, then how am I supposed to communicate it with it? Because I'm still a person. And the people watching this movie are still people and humans. And they need something to connect and latch onto. So, like, this is a really cool design. But I, as a viewer, I don't know what I'm supposed to be staring at exactly. Like, is that its dick? Is that its head? what is this thing?
Yeah.
And so they said we had to kind of go back a little bit and... And that only becomes like background characters, like the weirdo things to look at. And it's kind of the same with Star Trek. Like, what made them interesting was the weird facial prosthetics. And if they had maybe something, like they had the one creatures that had the little breathing apparatus. And it was just, it looked like a harmonica that you would play at a concert.
Yeah, I remember those guys.
Yeah, and it was just by their nose. And that was all you needed. Bumpy forehead. Okay, he's an alien. I know where to look when he's yelling. You know, I can relate to him when he's emoting and things like that. That's important. If you put a robot thing over a guy's face, I don't know what I'm looking at.
That could have been anybody. That was me. Did you know that?
Yeah. Like, do you emojis know? Pop up instead of, like, you know how, like, the old Nokia phones with, like, the smiley faces that were,
It's like, and it's all sideways, too.
Yeah, talking to a Tamagotchi or something.
That's true. So that was stupid. I liked those small little things about the Klingons that I thought were like the pink blood.
Pink blood. That was there.
Which, I mean, look, Star Trek fans are sticklers for consistency. If you say one thing is one thing on day one, on day two, you can't change that again. It's, it's a curse of doing long-form science fiction. So, yeah, like when they made Star Trek VI and all the Klingons are bleeding pink... It's not a very manly color, but it was their thing. They had pink blood. And then when Worf came along, like, okay, listen, pink blood is expensive and it looks kind of gay. So we're not going to do it. They had fabulous blood. But it was kind of fun to see here. The eyes open at the funeral when they launched that guy into his little coffin.
Yeah. Then they all yelled and howled when he died.
Yeah, like those are all okay. Those things I recognize. So yeah, that was good. The last thing I had for episode one was the ridiculous hollow communicator device.
I like that.
I like it in the sense that it makes for much more interesting on-screen interactions rather than talking to a TV screen, and that was the impetus for doing it in Deep Space Nine, which occurred in our time 20 years ago, and in their time 200 years in the future.
Well, yeah.
So there's two problems with it. Number one, it ain't new. Actually, there's more than two problems with it. It's not new, and they think it's new, and they're stupid. Number two, the technology wouldn't have been invented yet. So, nerd alert, this is my complaint about this, is that it doesn't make any sense with what I know to be what this is. And it portends more of that stuff, which again, I find that insulting. It's like, you wanted me to watch this show. You made this knowing you had an enormous built-in fan base. And now you're going to just say, well, everything that you knew what this was is wrong or isn't convenient for us to worry about, and so we're not going to. So you're going to reel me in and then disassociate my memories of the show with what you're doing and not expect me to be kind of like, huh? That upsets me. It's annoying. The other thing was the people were fucking interacting with the environment around them when they're not really in the room.
That was Mike. So like in the first episode, I thought it was really cool. I was like, oh, cool. We got holograms now. We don't have to talk on computer monitors anymore like you and I are doing right now. And
it's visually dull to show that. I get that. I'm not an idiot.
And then in the second episode, they were still doing it. But at one point, the Admiral, you know, he's telecommuting on to the bridge, and he starts walking around as if he's there. And I was like, okay, now is he there? Does he have like a big space where he can be projected? How is this going to work?
Sarek sits on the desk, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, like you've taken it too far. Because I just assume he's being broadcast from somewhere. And I don't care about being a nerd. It's just my brain is like, well, is he there or is he not there? And he's flickering. Can he touch stuff? You know?
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah. It
took it a little too far.
It was flawed on multiple levels, but the most important one was that one. They were screwing with the logic of the reality that they were creating,
right?
Like, and you can't do that when you make science fiction.
Yeah, like I realize it's not a real thing. We don't have holographic people walking around that way, but also it didn't make sense that he could sort of walk around like he was really there. Because what is he seeing now? I don't know. Yeah. Does his bridge look like the bridge he was supposedly standing on, or?
I mean, the rules are very simple. And the rules are, there are rules. You don't get to do whatever you want. If you want to write science fiction, great. But you have to set up what the rules are for the world that you're building. And then you have to stick by them. And if you do that, we'll believe anything. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, as long as things are consistent, you know, the sky's the limit. It's just, it's not always easy, but, you know, that's what, yeah. So that's all I had from episode one, which I watched nearly live. I was maybe 10 minutes behind.
Yeah. On that one. What'd you think of episode two?
I had a couple of story issues and a couple of... Yeah, you know, some of them are nitpicky things, but so the main issue here is that the Klingons decided to all get together and attack the Federation, but in reality, it was one douchebag on a ship somewhere that decided that the 24 houses of the Klingon Empire needed to stop their petty squabbles and come together because. The Federation is bad because that's what it says in my script. So he calls them with this giant beacon of light. They all show up. And in 10 minutes, galvanizes the entire empire into working together to oppose a threat they weren't even aware of 10 minutes earlier.
Almost. Some of them don't join him.
Right. But the audience doesn't even know why. Like, they're doing it. You know, their motivations are vague, and they were able to use vague motivation to motivate other people unvaguely.
Yeah.
And that doesn't jive.
So I thought the second episode was a pile of hot garbage. And, like, watching it, I kept, like, doing this where you slap your forehead like, I can't believe it. Do people still do that, or is that old-fashioned? You know, just... The lapses in logic and the acting was terrible, and all the lines. I was like, wait, what is happening now?
Acting was so bad. All of it was so bad.
Okay, so you're right. This guy uses a beacon of light because he's religious. He's a religious zealot, and he believes that the purity is that we should eliminate these people who say they come in peace when what they really want to do is assimilate us into their culture. Benignly or not, we don't want to do that. All right. But he calls them with this thing, which is still unexplained. It's just a thing that shines out light, draws everybody there, gets almost all of them to go along with this, and they just start blowing everyone up. And I was like, okay. And Michael spends most of her time in the brig.
Yeah, she doesn't really do much of anything in that episode, does she?
Yeah, because for insubordination. And then it just becomes this long, once again, long, boring, drawn-out battle scenes. You know, and they're all, like, blaming her as if she forced them to fire on her. I don't understand. I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. What are they mad at her for?
I mean, her behavior was ridiculous. But
yeah, but she didn't do anything.
It didn't precipitate the situation. She was right. Overreacting to it.
It would have happened whether she was there or not.
It's like the Indiana Jones thing. He's entirely incidental to what's actually going on.
She has literally nothing to do with anything. You know?
Yeah. Not a goddamn thing.
And a guy got sucked into space like I knew was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my few positive notes.
Really?
The one where he gets like the one on the bridge or the one in the
break? There's the guy on the bridge, and he gets hurt. The panel explodes in his face. So she goes, "Go down to sick bay," and instead he goes to the brig and
because he has a concussion. Yeah,
he gives a little speech. Why are we under attack? We're such good guys. I'm like, oh my god, what is this fucking thing? And then he gets sucked in his space.
Yeah. I actually thought that the visual of that was neat, that like her cell was the room was half destroyed. So half the room, she was just staring out into open space. That, yeah. I mean, the idea of having emergency force fields in place, yeah, to see that looked kind of neat, but that was it. And there was one other time where one other guy got sucked out off the bridge, mm-hmm. like the window shattered.
Yes.
And he missed it took the emergency force field half a second too long to activate, and it sucked one guy out.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wow, that sucks for that guy. I mean, good thing that all the main characters are okay, but...
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so...
I also hated how she out-logicked the computer.
Yeah. It's just like...
You know, you do.
Yeah. There was a huge, and I actually rewound and watched this twice just to make sure I understood this correctly. And this is kind of nitpicky, but I don't think it's that nitpicky. So, torpedo or phaser or whatever, they seem to be the same thing here because the phasers are fired in bursts and like the little lasers. Blows up part of the ship they're on. You watch it happen, explode, you know. So... The captain, you know, Captain Incomprehensible, says
she's awful.
Yeah. I mean, it's not her fault. She has a very heavy accent.
She's not very good.
She's not very good. says to him, damage report. And he goes, hull breach on deck this.
But the shields
emergency
are up.
Emergency force. But the shields are at 100%.
Yeah, I remember
go
that.
Go fuck yourself. That was awful. That right there. Is why I hated this so much. It was lazy. It was flaccid, sloppy writing. I'm probably more fired up about this than I've been about anything else we've ever talked about, but Jesus Christ.
So the same problem with this episode as the last one in that I still don't have anyone I care about yet. I don't care that she's in the brig because she deserves to be there. And...
she did the wrong thing, everybody.
Yeah, no, she's not a great... And I don't care that she's a very emotional person who was raised with logic. Okay? I don't care about that. That just isn't very interesting. Why? Because Spock used to be that way, so we've seen that already. And at the same time, she's... I hate to say, but she's not that good an actress in that. She doesn't walk the line very well. And she's also not written well. So one minute, I thought she was a Vulcan in the very first scene of the first episode. Mm. Okay. And then you find out that she's so wildly emotional, she will incapacitate her captain and try to take over the ship. So she's all over the place. I'm like, all right, well, I can't trust this person.
And then the flashback, which I actually thought she pulled off the pretending to be a full Vulcan kind of pretty well.
Right.
It's actually really hard to act like a Vulcan.
Well, she played
There's
that part.
There's a reason that Leonard Nimoy got praised for it. It was not easy to do that.
Well, you know, that first scene when they're in the desert, I was like, oh, she must be a Vulcan because she's doing a good job of that. But she plays an unhinged, crazy person not very well. Okay. So she's in the brig. The captain is ineffective. The wuss guy isn't doing anything either. And they're still the only people I see on screen. Who is in control of this battle? I don't know. The admiral doesn't show up until he gets killed.
Yeah.
So, and they're constantly just like, well, we're getting attacked. Oh, we're firing back. Oh, we're getting attacked. Well, you know, whatever. Like, who's in charge? What's the plan here? How long are they going to keep fighting for? And at the end, when, like,
what is it anybody wants? And who the hell are you people?
Yeah, what are we doing? Like, are we that ineffective that we can't hit these people back? And then at the end, when they have the two of them go over there, who said they could do that?
And why is it it's okay now after you tried to, you know, knock me out and take over my ship? Now I'm cool with it?
Yeah, no.
What changed exactly? I mean, things got worse, but like there's nobody else you can grab and say, all right, let's go over there and do our thing.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
So, yeah. All that, not good. You know, she's getting hurt and Sarek is beaming himself to her brain.
What the hell was that all about?
You know, it's like Katra. That's a word you guys know, right? Katra, you remember Katras? Did you guys see Star Trek 3? I mean, like...
And I like that guy. He's good at it.
Oh, he's a good actor, that guy. But they're just throwing names. Like, you remember these words. We found them in the Star Trek dictionary. That's why they're here.
I didn't like that.
The Klingons didn't blow them up at the end. They're totally defenseless. They stop firing. Mm-hmm. And they go, why'd they stop? Well, they don't have to kill us. We're being pulled into the gravitational field of these two stars. Boy, that seems inconsistent with everything I know about Klingons.
Right, so then why? It's almost as if
you contrive that to keep the episode going longer.
But there are other ships, right? So are they not firing? Is everybody disabled? I don't understand. I didn't get a good sense of where everybody was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Didn't know what was going on, who was where, what they were doing, why they were doing it, and why couldn't they turn on the lights in the courtroom at the end?
Oh, yeah. Life in prison. So did you catch that?
Yeah.
In every other Star Trek, and I thought it was like, wow, life in prison, that's pretty harsh. Yeah. Like, even for now. In every other Star Trek, whenever anybody ever gets in trouble, which is rare, they send them to penal colonies.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that to rehabilitate them and then they can go on their way, which is something people want to do now. That's a thing. People are like, we shouldn't put people in prison. We should do something to help them so that they don't stay there. They're just going to put her in prison forever. I was like, oh, okay. Well, she was. You know, she's the main actress. Are you sure?
Yeah, they're going to do that, even though, I mean, she did what wrong things, but the thing she did had nothing to do with the catastrophe that ensued. Yeah, she was completely and totally inconsequential. And yet they threw the book at her.
The previews for the next episode make it seem like. Like, she's hated for this. Like, oh, she started it. And then now we're in a war with everything. I'm like, what? I don't mean to laugh, but huh?
Yeah. I mean, so at the end of it, they had a 2-minute ad for their actual TV show. What the fuck this was. But, you know, the actual TV show looks completely different. Not only from this, but from anything that resembles Star Trek at all, which is not a bad thing. I mean, you brought up a good point. Like, you know, they could do this in a very different way. You could talk about, you know, people living in different places in the Federation. You don't have to do the same, you know, bunch of folks flying around discovering the unknown stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of looks like what this might be. Like, it's a different kind of ship. The captain is a little bit more eccentric. The war is going to be a thing. That's going to be a big part of this, I think.
And I went into this expecting that. I wasn't expecting more The Next Generation, more Voyager. You know, we have a lot of that stuff already. That's not the flavor of what is on television these days. And they just had three fairly successful movies by J.J. Abrams, which was space adventure film featuring Star Trek. So I was very much expecting, like, we're going to watch a TV show that has Star Trek in the name, but it won't be the same. That's fine. And but this just wasn't good as a space show or Star Trek.
No, it failed on both accounts.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, this is boring, incomprehensible. And if you want to look at it from Star Trek point of view, it's also very sloppy, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually interested to see what they're going to do next. Because if we ignore this hot, steamy pile of crap, then the show might make sense. If it's just like this is a, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like an intro.
Preamble. If you pretend it never happened, because like your point is well taken. She did the wrong things, but they had no effect on the actual outcome. Yet the setup for it, the subsequent episode, seems to be that she's despised as a traitor. You know, that she caused a war and then that they all hate her. If you could begin without this crap, you don't need that. You just have to say, we all hate that bitch.
Yeah.
And we go, okay.
She already has a tragic backstory. Her parents were killed by Klingons in a raid, and so she was raised by Vulcans. So, like, now she'll have two.
You know?
And that is too many. You get one thing, Larry.
But, yeah, you don't need... You could have just, you know... So, if we pretend this didn't happen and move forward, it might be interesting. I'm actually more interested to see what this ship is about. Because it seems to be, like, okay, the war's going on, but these folks are kind of doing something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Like, we're exploring new stuff. We have characters that we don't normally see. And, I mean, one of the things I really liked about DS9, there was a great scene with... there's two great scenes that sum up that show fantastically. The first scene is the one where Sisko is trying to get the Admiral's, you know, the bureaucrats to do something, and they won't listen to him because he's out on the frontier and they're all back at Starfleet, and he gets into an argument with Kira and says, you know what the problem is? The problem is Earth. On Earth, everything's perfect. Nothing's wrong. No one's poor. No one's sick. It's a paradise. It's Shangri-La. Here, it's different, and they don't recognize that. And that seems to be what what Dwight Schultz was talking about in that preview. Was like, you know, there's a lot more going on here than you realize, and there's more of us down here than there are of you up there. And it reminds me of that scene with Garak and Quark, where they talk about the root beer.
Yeah,
and he says, you know, drink this. He goes, no. He's like, oh, it's, you know, he tries it. He goes, oh, it's vile. He's like, yeah, but you drink enough of it, you begin to like it. That's what they do to you. And then he goes, do you think they'll be able to save us? I think they realize that they need them. Yeah. You know, it's this kind of sick relationship that they have. But that's, again, not new. But if that's done well and if it's handled, you know, respectfully, I think is the appropriate word, then it could be interesting to see where they go with all this.
Okay, so two things before we sign off. What do you think of the aesthetics? Obviously, you don't like them very much. Mm-hmm. It's just funny to me that they were like, we're going to set this in the same universe as the other Star Treks that you all know and love and make it a little bit before Kirk. But we're just going to update it to modern type of standards. And I was like, well, the nerds are not going to like that. I mean, I like the hologram thing. And the ships look cool. And some of the sound effects are the same. Huh, nostalgia.
I mean, the thing about the hologram that kind of works from a nerd point of view is that it looks like the one from Star Wars, which if you fast forward to, you know, DS9 in the future as compared to this show, there's no like fuzzy image. It's just the guy. It's just the actor sitting there, which was simply we didn't have to do a CGI effect to get this guy. He just brought the actor onto the set and stood there.
Yeah.
So if this is like, well, we abandoned hollow, you know, talking on chips because it didn't look very good.
No, you're overthinking it. It's just 2017 and we want this show to look good. That's all.
No, I know. I'm saying, like, if you want to retcon that, that's how you do it.
I don't think you can. There's just too much to do.
No, you can't. You know, but like,
talking computers, Klingons don't have hair anymore.
I mean, that's going to be a full-time job for some people now, is to figure out a way to shoehorn this into what we already know.
Yeah, and you just can't. And the same with the Klingons. Like, we want these guys to be the villains. Well, in the Shatner version, they don't look like this. They look like that later. And like, well, whatever. Even though we did a marvelous job explaining all of this stuff. It just
beautiful.
Forget it. Yeah. Just
I mean, it was elegant. It was funny. That was great. I loved that.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, it's an episode of Enterprise where they come up with a very plausible, if not a little bit convoluted, way of explaining why the Klingons from the 60s TV show looked like the humans, but were kind of orange.
Yeah. And I give them a lot of credit for being hamstrung from a 60s television show 40 years later and still managing to make it work.
Yeah.
So now you just have to go with it. Just throw all that shit out the window, man. And what do you think about this CBS All Access? I think it was a terrible mistake to do this.
I think it was a mistake to do this with Star Trek because you're basically holding something hostage that people really love and that they wanted. I mean, people really love this stuff. We've talked about it dozens of times, just us, and we're not even that crazy. But there are crazy people who love this, and you're basically saying, you know, you can have this, but it's going to cost you a bit more money. Mm. As a business decision, I understand it.
Sure.
Because you want to take something that's has that built-in audience. That's going to, I mean, it worked for Christ's sake, so you really can't fault them that much. But also, this is how things are going to go. It's not going to be a channel anymore. It's going to be pay tiers of access to things, tiers as in T-I-E-R, as tiers of streaming. So CBS is the first network to do this. You know, Fox is kind of doing it with FX now. But this is what the future is going to be. Programs will be run by entities and, you know, they'll have money, but you'll pay for a certain level of access. And usually that involves reducing the amount of exposure to advertising that you experience. Like this, it's like, what, $6 for this versus 14?
It's $7 for ones with commercials. And then it's $11 if you don't get the commercials, 11 or 12. Yeah.
So, you know, and that's just constant. I mean, that's how Netflix made all these billions of dollars. I mean, the going public helped, but they generated all the revenue because it's also why they don't care about what's good or not.
Yes, but however, you can't do this. You can't. This cannot be the future. People will not pay $12 a month for every channel they want to watch. They just won't do that. So what will happen is they'll start to get bundled. Netflix doesn't have 8 shows. Netflix has hundreds of shows and hundreds of movies, and it's continuing to make more. Okay? The only thing CBS has is this. And as soon as this is over, I'm going to drop that subscription like a hot rock. Okay?
Right. But there are some people who want to go back and watch all the episodes of NCIS. Or
no,
they want access.
No one wants to do that. Also, this is CBS. The average age of the viewers of CBS is 50 to 55. So most people don't even know how to use this fucking thing.
Yeah, but those people will be dying soon. And while the demographic, their prime demographic may not change, but the people who are going to be 55 in 10 years will know how to work this stuff.
No, they won't. That's my point. Our mother is 62, 63. She doesn't know how to work this stuff. In 10 years, she'll be 73 and she won't even try.
Well,
My point is, you have to get younger people to watch these things. And you have only one show on your network that's even sort of skewed for younger people called Star Trek, and they have to pay? They won't, unless they're big fans.
But purchasing this subscription gets you access to the other shows.
I don't want to watch Blue Bloods. I don't want to watch Caroline in the City. They don't have anything I want to watch. It's for older people that you can watch for free. Or in reruns on TBS.
I disagree. I think more people are going to begin to cut the cord and then cherry pick. I want to watch shows on CBS. I don't want to watch shows on NBC or Fox. And just today, I was talking to a colleague of mine. She's 70 years old. She is a big fan of that show, This Is Us, on NBC. And she said, I didn't know if I was going to like it and whatever else. And then she says, I watched one episode, and then I went back and watched them all on demand. And I loved. People will do that. And people will, you know, as technology, you know, as this becomes more common, younger people will become older people, and it'll just be part of how this works. And you can do the thing you've always wanted to do, which is to cherry pick what, you know, the kind of programming that you want. And you can cut everything out, but yeah, HBO Go and Netflix and this.
But it starts to add up. I'm not going to pay for 14 subscription sites to watch one show on each thing. They'll start to bundle together again. That's what will happen.
Or the cost will decrease when they begin to compete more directly with streaming services. Like right now, competition's incidental. You know, you don't go to HBO because you don't like Netflix or one thing. You just kind of grab them as they come because, I mean, streaming is still relatively nascent. But eventually, you know, the programming on this will be, you know, they have this that this person doesn't have, but this person has this. So then they begin to drop prices to compete with each other. I mean, you make a good point that, like this might seem very short-lived and it might blow up in their face, but it doesn't seem, you know, totally foreign, the concept of, you know, of putting things online and creating access to stuff through a subscription while enticing everyone with, this is only available here. But if you come to get this, you also get all this crap that you may find you can binge watch 10 seasons of. And it doesn't matter how much or how little you do that, we still have your $12 a month.
I think you're wrong. Whatever. I think it was a mistake on their part to do this.
I don't love it, but
I mean, I'm not going to bitch and moan, but I'm not going to do this for every single show. I'm just not. There's just a limit to this sort of thing, and when it hits them, I can hear them. Oh, I can't believe this didn't. Yeah, nobody wanted to watch it. No, there's a limit.
I think eventually, what's going to start happening is that the, you know, CBS makes TV now. They have production companies that make it. I think eventually what's going to happen is that they won't have that aspect anymore. And what they'll do is that independent production companies will sprout up, and maybe they'll be, and it's like, you know, and they'll try to sell their shows to the, it'll be not too dissimilar from what we have right now, but it'll be online. And the way that you access it will be different, and that you pay for a subscription to CBS or to ABC or NBC. But it'll function kind of the same way, is that production companies will go out and make a TV show and then run around and try to sell that TV show to Netflix or to HBO or to whomever. It's not too dissimilar to how it's done now, but the networks themselves will divorce themselves from their original programming. They'll have less connection to that. They'll be just in charge of access, and they'll collect as many good shows as they can and say, if you buy our subscription service, you get, you know, great shows A through Z. So it's going to restructure itself to look a lot like how it looks right now. It's just the point of access will be slightly different, mm-hmm. which is good and bad. I mean, I think it's bad because we're not really making any progress to change anything, but it's good in that maybe you could decide, you know, that you don't want everything. I, for Christ's sakes, I have 300 TV channels. We watch the Disney Channel for my son. We watch the Big Bang Theory, you know, and like, but anything else I watch, I can get from HBO Go or from Netflix or from wherever. Well, so it'd be great if I could just, you know, have a few. The only problem,
some people can do that, but I can't do that. So my wife watches NBC. I watch the CW and HBO and Hulu and Netflix and CBS now. That's 5-6 different things. I can't pay for all those things.
Right.
And you'll hear people bitch and moan, oh, you should get a job. It's not about having a job. I could be a bazillionaire. My point is I don't want to waste my money, whether I get a ton of it or I have very little. Okay? So something will eventually break. And which way it goes, I don't know. I'm just saying, as of now, it's a pain in the butt.
So. Sports, anyway. I think, is what's going to be. It's going to come down to.
Oh, that too, yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do you... It's the only reason that I haven't cut the cord entirely.
And I only watch baseball primarily.
Yeah.
What if I watched every sport and college sports? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Forget about it. Anyway. Well, like I said before, everybody, thank you very much for responding to our Twitter poll on the Twitter there. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at @3DrinksInPod. That's @3DrinksInPod. We're on Instagram, 3DrinksInPodcast, Facebook page and website, 3DrinksInPodcast.com. Questions, concerns, comments, complaints, sponsors can contact us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you think we're full of shit. Because we have a lot of opinions about this, as you can clearly tell, and some lively and respectful debate would be appreciated, which is a lot to ask on Twitter. But do your best.
Yeah, somebody complained that my options on the Twitter poll were dumb or condescending, and I was like, "Lady, I only get 4. I can't do 10. We're not Reuters, okay?"
Yeah, I thought that was an odd choice. Condescending, yeah. Like. I thought that was a pretty fair poll, actually.
Sorry, the show sucked.
Yeah. possibly moving forward, we may start doing some micro episodes on a more weekly basis, to see if this gets any better or if it gets any worse.
Oh yeah, we don't have to do a whole feature length hour every single episode. I mean, who has the time?
So. No. Like, I don't get how podcasts can cover an entire TV show one episode at a time, talking about it for longer than the damn thing ran. Like, the episode's only 42 minutes. They went on for an hour and a half, about one. Like, no, okay. We can do 10 minutes on if this is still a steaming pile of dog shit.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anything else we need to... I can't imagine.
I think we got it.
All right, everybody. As always, please drink responsibly.
Take care.
Adios.